Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. Once again, we are with Rick Solis and Andrea Esplund, and they are investors in Southern California. Thank you for joining us again.
Thanks, you. Bruce.
When did you notice, and you're in the appraisal business, but when did you notice that things were really changing from, you know, from an up market to a flat market to one that was all of a sudden in a free dive?
Well, I noticed things were slowing down the summer of 2006. It was getting harder to sell stuff. There was less offers, and it was just the excitement was starting to fall off. I noticed the free dive where it was just terrible was 2008. That was when things got really bad.
And prices, I remember Greg, you know, we're in the buying and selling business, and he was coming in going, Dad, the prices are dropping like 3 or 4% a month.
Yes, they were. It was 3% a month. So you could buy stuff 30% below market, and 10 months later, all your equity was gone.
Yeah, so we weren't in the buy and hold, but sometimes you almost got there because it was tough to sell. So that was a little bit of a scary time. What did you guys do as far as business during that time?
Did we buy two houses in 2008, right? Two rentals?
Yeah, we did. I bought a one too, 2008. Okay. So we started buying in 2008.
Okay.
I was wanting to go hard, and Rick was not wanting to go hard at all.
No, I saw what was coming in 2009. I just totally sat out the whole year. I didn't want any part of that. And I think you bought quite a bit of stuff in 2009, didn't you? But I just wasn't interested.
2009, you were buying from what type of inventory?
All REOs.
Okay.
Every one of them.
So completely changed, again, where you were chasing the deal before with absentee mailers.
Yeah.
Now you're just building relationships with agents, or is it
agents.
Just... Okay.
Just and agents.
Are you trying to build relationship to where that becomes repetitive, or are you just
Absolutely.
Making offers on stuff that's... Okay.
So I want repeat business.
Okay. That sure seems to be the easiest way to do it.
Yeah. I quit going to lunch with my investors and started going to lunch with realtors, Bruce.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the advantage of being around it for a few cycles where you realize, okay, isn't it interesting that skill set that you know how to do, meet with people... It really doesn't play a part in this cycle as much as it does building a relationship that's repetitive. So it's almost like having an account where you would call in like a store that you own and you have a product and you just be able to show up once in a while and take an order. And that's what this cycle, this quadrant two is like, is that you're building relationships that have legs. And that's very different than calling a one-call closing skill like in 2003 and 2004 that you would need.
Right. So no, it's long-term. I want long-term relationships.
And it's what's interesting, too, is that people that are in this business for the first time now, that the assumption is this is how it works. So we just had a boot camp where there's two guys doing short sales. Well, the word short sale isn't even understood for a decade at a time in California. So they have a business model that is working perfectly until it doesn't work, and then it'll be non-existent for a long time. So that's what's tricky about what we do, is that you really have different skill sets necessary for whatever phase.
And it seems like a lot of the investors are good at one thing and not the rest of the thing. So they're only in it for a few years, like the short sale guys. I mean, either they're going to have to change or they're going to get another job, because that short sale thing is going to go away at some point and not be back for,
Like saying I'm really good at attending HUD auctions. Well, okay, that's great. That they last one they had was 97, so.
Or even the trustee sale. Even the trustee sale buyers. I mean, that's going to not go away, but be very slim. I mean, 5 or 6 years from now, there won't be as much trustee sale business.
It'll be interesting, because since we're doing that now, I mean, the margins are very tight. The quantity of people interested in it is very big. But we used to fund people that were doing it before. And their margins were good, but there was fewer people and fewer properties. So the ratio actually turned out to be fine. I think, honestly, what's changed, and this is true in the REO business, is the access to information is so much easier and quicker to come up with an intelligent decision, that you have people walking into a business that don't know very much that become pretty close to, let's say, 80% capable inside of 2 months.
Wow. Yeah, that's hard to compete with.
Yeah, I mean, well...
So even the ones that leave, there's a whole other wave showing up that just need 2 months of training and they're pros.
Well, I mean, it doesn't mean that they're coming to accurate conclusions, but they think they are. So how hard is it to do an appraisal if you think pushing a button and getting a, opinion of one of those sites as accurate?
Yeah. Yeah, the Zillow side.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, the flatter the market is, the more accurate Zillow is.
That's true.
So we just actually, we pulled up 10 recent sales because I just wanted to see. And it was only 1 out of 10 properties that was wrong by 10%. And most of them were within 2%.
A really flat market, sometimes even the assessed values are pretty tight on a lot of those things.
Yeah, depending how recent it gives somebody a false sense that they know what they're doing, especially, again, if this is all they've seen, then they think that Zillow is correct all the time. Where, a few years ago, it was not remotely correct. So the type of inventory that you are buying and holding, how different is it from the buy-sell inventory?
A lot different. Okay. A lot different.
Yeah, the buy-sell can be much bigger houses or houses with pools or two-story houses or...
I guess
nicer areas.
That's why I brought it up. I think that's absolutely necessary because the retail buyer really wants that and can, if he's going to buy, he's going to be able to, because of the interest rates, probably afford that inventory that he wants. I think if you tried to sell that Victorville inventory you're renting, even though the price per month would be nothing, I think you'd have
some
challenges.
It
would be hard. Even the difference, the two I have now, one's in Anaheim and one's in Rialto. There's a huge difference there between buyers and everything else.
What's tell me about the Anaheim property, just curious.
As far as...
But just is it a condo or is it a single family?
No, it's a single family house.
And it was found as an REO as well?
No, actually, Rick flipped that one to me.
Okay.
From a friend of his.
Oh. Yeah, a realtor friend of mine brought me the deal and I wholesaled it to her.
Okay, but it was a relationship in an REO then?
Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't an REO. The gentleman that owned it had passed away from cancer.
Okay. Yeah, it was a probate thing. It was a mess, too. That house needed a lot of money to fix.
Well, and, that's what's changed as far as what you sell, and that's one of the reasons we shifted to the trustee sale inventory is I would say 75% of what we have is newer than 2,000, bigger than 2,000 square feet, and that's really the sweet spot for the retail buyer.
Terrible rentals.
Oh, of course, yeah. You couldn't think of renting it, so you better not.
You couldn't even buy something like that.
No, most of our rentals are, we have less than $100,000 tied up in the rehab and the purchase price. And if you're over $100,000 and you're getting hard money financing, it's hard to make that pencil out. So you have to end up with kind of the farther out stuff, the older stuff. You're not going to get a lot of Ontario, Upland, Ranch Cucamonga rental houses right now. Unless you're putting a lot of money down, or you can be one of the very few people in the United States that can get an investor loan from a bank.
It's interesting. I think that's going to change. I really got that sense when I was back in Washington that they're trying to figure out how to make that palatable to whoever they have to make happy. But I think it's dawned on them they're not going to fix this by selling it one at a time to owner-occupants. That was my gut.
I'm kind of positioning myself to take advantage of that when the financing becomes available.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And in my opinion, it probably needs to happen because one of the things when you talk about Victorville, one of those charts that we have shows that 76% of the people are over encumbered from either 10% to over 100%, which means that they're stationary or they're going to be an REO or they're going to be a short sale. So 76 out of 100 people are in that situation.
Yeah.
If you go up there and you look at how many percentage of the transactions, what percentage is REO or short sale, it's probably 80%.
Yeah, at least.
Okay.
Maybe higher.
Okay. Well, that means that 80% of the time or more, a buyer does not emerge from the sale of that property. Those people aren't going to buy. So you have an extra family looking for a rental or to move in with themselves, but they don't produce a buyer. So that means at a ratio of 4 to 1, you have to have another occupant buyer move in up to Victorville. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. It's perfect for rentals.
Yeah.
Getting the best renters
I was going to ask you about that. Who is the tenant? Give me the, are these the people that just lost their house?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And a lot of times they, I love them. They're grateful. They think like a homeowner. So they're used to taking care of things.
That's true, huh? They're not used to being...
They're not.
But they're actually used to not paying either.
This is true, but we're pretty careful. We don't throw anybody in our houses.
Okay. And a lot of them are just solid, hard-working, blue-collar families that don't make a huge amount of money, but they make a good living, and, I mean, they can get by.
Yeah, and they happen to end up in a, like, first-time buyer situation where they're paying $400,000 for a house that's not worth $125,000 or something.
Yeah, and everybody would walk from that situation.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, you're paying three times your mortgage of what you can rent the house next door for.
Yeah, that's, you can understand the rationale between, okay, we can't continue to do all this forever.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so... Okay, well, and you guys manage these properties yourself? Who wears that hat?
We both do the management, although Andrea probably does 80% of it. The 20% that I do, I really don't enjoy. So I really look forward to saying goodbye to those rentals. It's not my favorite thing.
So you have a job assignment of these houses to someday leave a big check and see you later?
Oh, yeah. Forever. Leave forever and don't come back.
Rick does not like taking calls.
I don't like a lot of drama. So
he doesn't want any kind of relationship with them.
I have enough trouble keeping my own house fixed and my own stuff dealt with, and I don't want... You know, everybody else calling me for their stuff, so...
Well, you know, that's always been interesting to me when you have the thought of creative financing, because you never get rid of anybody. You know, you're selling, you're buying with a wrap, you're selling with a wrap, everybody's still in your life, and you're just going, wow.
Yeah, no, I don't want that.
I knew a guy in the desert who used to do, he had a $100 spread on 100 houses. That was his $10,000 a month.
That's perfect if everybody pays.
Right. That's what he was showing me that, and I was thinking, if 10% of the people don't pay you, you're gone. I don't get that. That's just, just the thought of that, I thought, oh, I don't like that. I like the spread, but I also like, you know, the buying at a discount, but I also like have a great life, and then I'm still by myself. That's cleaner.
Yeah.
REOs are like that. It's nice. It's simpler. Now, you guys said you kind of were aggressive in 2010, but not really feeling the same way in 2011. So why is that?
Well, for me, I really kind of misread the market. I kind of thought the way things were taking off that demand was coming back because of that government stimulus thing. But I really thought that they were just going to keep rolling that stuff out. So I thought we had bottomed, and the houses were cheap and there was still plenty of inventory, so I wanted to just load up on as many as I could at that point. And once I noticed that property values are dropping, inventory levels are shrinking, every investor and their brothers like entering our market, we're competing with them, I started losing motivation. But when I noticed that we're bottoming again or we can get really good financing, then I'm in with both feet. I just, who knows how long that's going to be.
Okay. And do you guys draw always the same conclusions?
Yeah, we're kind of on the same page on a lot of things. I mean, I still continue to look and that, but honestly, all the rentals that we've gotten have been from relationships.
And now, and I would think they that their inventory is down as well, as far as the REO agent themselves.
Really far.
Yeah, we have one in particular that... I know he'll call us on a weekly basis, really trying to push something.
Yeah, they're calling now with stuff that just doesn't even make sense, but they're just desperate for
that's all
commission.
They've
done.
Yeah.
Are they dueling as short sale agents too? Or I'm just curious, have they gone to the other side?
I don't know about that.
Some of them do, and a lot of them don't, though. I would say most of the ones that I've dealt with do not. But I know a couple that do short sales as well.
Rick, when you're appraising, you know, we're doing a fair amount of volume, you know, throughout the year. You get a sense about some areas that are you know, going up or declining. You know, is it different in different price bands and different counties, that type of thing?
I think it is different. It does seem like if you're selling something over 500,000 in almost every market that has those, that market just seems like it's gone.
Yeah.
Even the really good areas like Glendora or, you know, Upland, Claremont, there's so little demand for that product that's tough. I don't really see any areas that are going up in value, but I'm mostly in the Inland Empire, so I don't know about like Orange County or, you know, West LA County, but in the areas that I'm at, it seems like things are kind of gradually declining in most areas.
Okay. When you say gradually, and that's, I mean, you're talking about over a year spread, you're talking about something that's like 5% or more?
Yeah, something like that. It seems like the listings are usually higher than the solds that closed a couple months ago, and it seems like they're dropping maybe on average a half percent a month. But then also sellers are kicking in a lot of closing costs, which, I mean, that actually translates into another 3% a month that, or 3% you're paying out that you weren't a year ago.
Have you had many appraisal issues done when you're selling the properties?
I haven't, but I really don't try to squeeze that for everything I can. I want it to be a pretty good, well-priced from the get-go. So I haven't experienced it yet.
Okay.
I've been fortunate.
Are you doing fairly heavy repairs on the properties?
Well, the one in Anaheim, I put $100,000 into.
Okay, that qualifies as a pretty heavy repair, mind you.
She knew that going in, though.
It was a big rehab.
Okay, well, in an area like that, I mean, price range, what's a resale on that?
$485 is what it's listed for.
Okay. How about rents? Are they, the assumption was we have all these foreclosures, the rents will explode, and great, demand would be great. So how are rents?
Rents to me seem pretty stable. You can usually get a good tenant, you know, within a month. There are a lot of landlords that are kind of renting to like lower quality tenants and getting higher rents. But I think overall they have a lot more evictions and vacancies and problems that it kind of balances out to the landlords that are pricing at market rents.
Yeah, rents are down as far as what you could have gotten.
But not a huge amount. Would you say maybe 5 or 10% over the last 3 years?
Yeah, people are money conscious, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, we usually put our rents a little bit lower than market.
So you have a selection of the person.
Right.
How are you fixing the rentals as far as the...
Way better than we would have previously, yeah. We're fixing them nice.
Okay.
We fix them a lot better than a lot of landlords, too. I mean, as I see a lot of landlords that just do terrible work and... I mean, no screens and broken appliances and heaters don't work. And we see a lot of that. And they're the ones that end up with the problem tenants. And ours, we fix everything. Everything's working good.
We want to attract the best people we can attract. That's basically what our model's been.
Yeah. Some of the rentals that we have in Moreno Valley are, you know, that's what we did. We fixed stuff up really well because that's an area that got hit like Victorville. So you'd have a fair amount of people looking at it, but you'd have only one house that had, you know, our repair. So it was kind of easy to pick the best one. And
yeah.
We haven't had challenges of kicking people out or even missed rent. And so that was rewarded. And one of my thoughts was that when I resell this house, I don't have to do a major rehab again because that granite's still going to be there. And
hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Thanks, Rick.
Well, we did the same thing.
I asked Mike and Tony this question, and I'm going to ask you guys some of these types of questions. What's non-negotiable in your day? Andrea?
Well, mine's similar to Mike, actually. My reading time is very important to me, and my workout.
Okay.
I don't negotiate that.
I like the working out ones. Does that do something for you other than keep you in shape?
Yeah. For me, it's my private time. I like to be alone, and it's a time for me when I get good ideas and I can decompress and think.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Clearly.
I like that.
It's like church for me.
Okay. I'm going to go on a cruise on Saturday, and I'll work out every day, and I'll have my headsets on because that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm thinking, and it's people come on vacation exercise. Yeah, I actually really look forward to that because it's really solitude and you're looking at the ocean and it is amazing sometimes ideas. And for me, it's a de-stress too. That's a good diffuser for me is exercise where you just at the end, you're so tired you can't care to that level about something that doesn't make sense anyway.
I get such good ideas. I keep a little notebook there because flashes will come to me that'll, you know.
Isn't it amazing that they don't stick around? I mean, the best idea.
It's what the notebook's for. Yeah. Otherwise, I will forget it.
Yeah, you could have the best idea where you're locked in and say, oh, that is awesome. And 10 minutes later, you go, what was that? You don't remember. All right, what about for you? What's non-negotiable in your day?
You know, I feel bad whenever I hear you ask that question because I really have nothing. I mean, it's just I have to have 7 hours of sleep a night. That's the only thing. Although I have offered to sell that to people when they need like a rush appraisal. I tell them, hey, if you're willing to pay a couple thousand bucks, I'll give up a night's sleep. Nobody's ever taken me up on it, but I don't really have anything non-negotiable. When I was younger and more motivated, I did read a lot, so it probably would have been the reading. But
I hadn't thought about this. Andrea, according to you, what's his best character strength or his best quality? Let's put it that way.
Well, I think Rick's a really great guy. Like, his integrity is there. And we've been through good times, and it's easy to go through good times. And we started out with nothing when we had a lot of things to overcome. And that's when you really find out who you're with.
Absolutely.
And I know he would have my back. We would figure it out.
That's so important. But it's also good realization. I've had plenty of people assume that something was in place. And I would ask that question, have you ever been through hard times together? It's just like, no. It's like, you have no idea who's going to show up. Mike and I were at lunch, and he said, man, I've seen a lot of people's character change in the last couple of years. I said, you haven't seen it change. You've seen it revealed.
Exactly.
That's what shows up when bad times hit.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah, and what about working with Andrea?
She will never give up. She will fight to the end to get to the finish line. And a lot of times I'm looking for what's the quickest, easiest solution out of this, and she's like, no, what's the best solution? And I'm always like, no, let's just do that way. This was way easier, but no, we're going to end up way better if we do that. You know, and she just won't give up, and I'm amazed that she just, no matter how bad things are, she will get to the finish line, and it usually works out way better than the way I would have gone.
Do you, either one of you have favorite book that you've read this year? I know you've read some. You've talked to me about
it. I was reading that Dan Kennedy book, and I can't remember the name. Do you remember the title of that?
Yeah.
Unfinished Business. Yeah, I really enjoyed that book a lot. That was a good one.
What's the basis of that?
It's kind of his life story, like an autobiography, but it just tells you all the businesses he's done and what he, you know, how he did the business, and he really failed a lot and how he got back up. And
is that in the bookstores or is that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a really good book. I think it just came out. It's an update of when he did a while back.
Okay. And
you know, Aspire was really good. Aspire. I thought that was a great little book, and I don't know who the author was.
That's okay. Reading is definitely one of those things that you get into the habit, and it's just hard not to do it.
Yeah, no, that to me, I mean, my bed's full of books.
Yeah, I've got five of them going now, and it's interesting. They're all wrapped together. There's not one real estate one amongst them, but they're all connected tissue, you know, when you sit there and go, okay, one of them is about how people get to be great, you know, and you find out you don't have to be the most gifted person in the room. You can be the person that finds out that they can try harder, work harder, end up with the best reputation, that type of thing. And I enjoy reading those kind of books because most of us are there. You know, we're with the average skills, and how do we get to be the excellent person?
Yeah, you're right.
One of the gentlemen that I one of my favorite things to do every day is work out with the gentleman that's been a karate master for 40 years, and we've talked about that, you know, who's been the best students. It's definitely not the athlete, the guy that walks in and is gifted and could do probably 70% of what he's going to end up doing naturally, never has the character to go, or very rarely has the character to take it to the light level. Somebody who's had to struggle with every piece of it,
yeah,
and then they finally emerge as this person. And that's the way it is usually with investing, you know, starting out where you don't have much is maybe the best favor in the world, because you really don't put the emphasis on the stuff. That was one of the best things for Marcia and I. You know, we were married, and the first thing I wrote was Food Stamps to Fortune, and Food Stamps was a reality.
That was a good book.
Early on, you know, because we're just going, wow, two kids and one hot dog in the refrigerator. That's not good. Well, you guys, I've really enjoyed speaking with you guys, Rick Solis and Andrea. I've always respected both of you guys, just so you know. That's why you're here.
Thank you, Bruce.
You give a lot to our industry as well. So thanks for joining.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.